So yes, I am Kevin Griffin, and this is our Dharma and Recovery, I would call it a class, but it sounds almost too formal. And as I was mentioning, this is something that's been going on since March 13th of 2020, so about 2.5 years now. And we're fortunate to have this technology and get to see people from around the country and beyond. I have just come back from beyond myself, from Ireland and Scotland and England, and it's good to be home. And lately we've been working with my book, A Burning Desire, which is about higher power through the lens of Buddhism. And so after our meditation, I'm going to draw from that. Actually, we're on the section on the precepts. And as I was looking at that this morning, it made me think maybe I would want to spend a few classes just on the precepts. It's an area of Buddhist teachings that's somewhat underemphasized in the Western kind of secular Buddhist approach. But for people in recovery, I think the precepts are really one of the most important aspects of Buddhism, and one of the things that really kind of connects us to Buddhism, because recovery is really about, it's about living by these precepts. So that's one way of characterizing it. So let's begin with a period of meditation. I will guide you for a while. We sit for about 20 minutes, and I'll give some guided instruction, and then I'll leave some quiet towards the end. I've been working with it's called the Anapanasati Sutta, which is the Sutta on Mindfulness of Breathing, and I'm going to start kind of teaching some of the elements of that for people. Of course, it's a practice that we do quite commonly, but interesting to draw from the specific instruction that the Buddha gave. So we start by just establishing our posture. You can close your eyes or just lower your gaze. And if possible, to sit upright. This tends to give us more energy and clarity. And nonetheless, if you have physical limitations, it's perfectly okay to lie down as well as to stand. And so we begin by bringing awareness to the breath, just awareness that we are breathing. We don't have to, try to feel anything special. Just notice that your body is breathing. Some breaths may be longer than others, some shorter. Just noticing that. Where in the body do you feel the breath? Well, it's interesting just to see the reach of the breath, how it actually moves and touches and is felt in a variety of places, from the nose and the face and the throat, down through the chest and the lungs and the belly, even the back and the ribs move with the breath. And if you pay close attention, you might find other areas that you can actually notice being moved or touched by the breath. So take a few moments to explore that. And continuing to feel the breath moving in the body, and letting your awareness encompass the whole body. Now, the instruction in the sutta is breathing in, feeling the whole body, breathing out, feeling the whole body. One translation is sensitive to the whole body, aware of the whole body, breathing and feeling the body. Breathing and feeling the body. And as we breathe with the body, quite natural that the body starts to settle, to become more calm. Breathing in, calming the whole body. Breathing out, calming the whole body. You don't have to do anything special to make this happen. Just let the attention be with the breath and the body. And allow calming to happen naturally. this way of working with the breath isn't so much about concentrating on breathing. Rather, we have a kind of open awareness that's able to be aware of the breath, to feel the breath, at the same time that we're aware of other experiences. We don't have to try to get microscopic with the breath or block out anything. Quite natural, easeful breathing, feeling the body, breathing, calming the body. As the body becomes more calm, a subtle form of energy sometimes appears. It's called PT. It's given English translations like rapture, joy, that don't quite capture it. Just notice if there's any subtle form of pleasant feeling in your body as you get more calm. And bring that into awareness with the breath. Breathing in, experiencing PT. Breathing out, experiencing PT. PT is often accompanied by a more subtle emotional energy called sukha, kind of calm, happiness, contentment. We're all familiar with these feelings. This feeling of contentment arises out of meditation. It arises in pleasant moments in nature. Hmm. Seeing if that's showing up right now as you breathe. Breathing in, experiencing sukha. Breathing out, experiencing sukha. And just breathing with the felt experience, whatever it is, whether it's pleasant, maybe unpleasant sometimes, or neither pleasant nor unpleasant, just a neutral feeling. Well, sometimes PT and sukha arise, sometimes not, but we can still breathe with the felt experience. Let the mind become absorbed in our felt experience. All right. So, I've been using this practice, experimenting with it in my own daily practice. I've used it on retreat, but just recently I thought, well, let me just see if I can sort of throw in these instructions and see what happens. Because ordinarily I don't sort of follow a really structured form of meditation. There are 16 steps. I just gave you the first six. There are 16 steps in the Anapanasati Sutta. And I don't know what some of them mean or what I'm supposed to do with some of them, actually. But I do find that when I just kind of drop them into my mind as I'm sitting, that there does tend to be this kind of concentration that develops pretty naturally out of that. It's quite interesting. And these two words, piti and sukha, as I've been writing about this sutta and the idea that, oh, I'm just going to calm the body and then these energies are going to arise is, I struggle with that a bit. And so I try to make it a little bit more generic in the sense that whatever, as I was saying, as the last instruction I gave, whatever feeling is there, to just be mindful of that and sort of, as I say, absorb into that. That is to say, like, let yourself really be immersed in the feeling, not trying to think about it or control it, but just really feel it fully. I find those words, as I said, the translations aren't very satisfying to me, but the word piti, because it's kind of got this edge to it, I think captures this quality that I've worked with more extensively on longer retreats. And then sukha also captures the quality of this softer feeling that comes. So the piti is more of an intense energy when it's really strong. It can appear in a very light way and kind of a background way, but when it's strong, it's this intense kind of jolts of energy and streams of energy in the body. And then the sukha is much more of like a contentment, a very warm heart feeling. But I'm a little curious I am curious to get any feedback about that guided meditation, whether that made sense, and particularly when you got to the PT and the sukha, did that just like throw you, or did anything come out of that? So if anybody wants to share, I'd be very interested to hear. Basically, I want to know, did that work or not? and it's totally okay if it did not, because it's, as I said, I'm just kind of experimenting with my own guidance for you guys. Go ahead, John. Hello.
Hi. I don't really meditate very much, so this is a new process for me. I do some when I do yoga, and they're very brief, and I focus on my breath. So actually sitting is a bit of a new experience. I mean, I'm familiar with it and done some very small stuff. So as I was focusing on what you were saying and the breathing, I had that experience. So it was fascinating then to hear you describe it and to use the word PT. I mean, it only lasted, it was momentarily.
And right.
Of course, I started thinking of the experience and
what's going on. Is not,
yeah, exactly. So it was. I thoroughly, I guess you could say, I enjoyed it.
That's okay.
Yeah, and it did catch my attention. So I enjoyed it. I liked it. Very good. Thank you.
Well, that's good to hear. And thank you, John. So since that kind of connected for you, try to do this on your own. Try to take the things that kind of stood out in your mind and repeat them and try sitting on your own and making that part of your practice. Yeah.
I will.
Thank you, John. Mary Helen, hi.
Hi. I appreciated that meditation. I'm not sure if what I felt was a PT or sutta, but I felt an invitation to just observe my body mind in an open and accepting way, which I often am more judgmental. So I appreciate it. I appreciated that.
That's great. Yeah, and that's the more essential spirit of it, right? So that's I think that's a really good approach to it. And absolutely, as I said, I mean, yeah, these words, I'm going to put them in the chat for people to see how they're spelled. There's PT and Sukha. It's hard sometimes to correlate, you know, these instructions that the Buddha gave a couple thousand years ago to our present moment experience and know, is this what he's talking about? Or, you know, am I just imagining that something is happening or am I on the right track? So it's just all, you know, an experiment in my mind. So, Denise, hello.
Hello. Hello. Nice to see you.
Thank you.
Yes, I actually find your voice very soothing, generally. And normally when I'm meditating, I feel love, the loving kindness, I try to do that. But I did actually feel the sukha. Sukha, is it?
Sukha.
The contentment.
Yeah.
That I actually did feel that. And it's actually made me aware of the fact that I am generally quite content these days, which was really quite, you know, a bit of a revelation. So thank you. Yes. It did. I'm not sure about the PT, but because probably the sukha was taking over.
Yeah, that's great. And thank you, Denise, because you're kind of reminding me, like, part of the point of this is to kind of evoke these existing feelings or kind of highlight things that are there. We're aware of them. And then we can, when we focus on something like that, it actually strengthens it.
Yeah.
And so we see, this is a useful thing to do, like, you know, to enjoy.
I feel really quite joyful that I'm content, if you know what I mean. Thank you.
And I think we associate sometimes meditation with this, like, hard work and sort of, that's like, so, you know, sitting still and your mind is all busy. And it's like, there can be some really sweet moments and just a sweetness in meditation, and that's really helpful to tune into, so that it doesn't always feel like we're having to fight or do this kind of grunt work, spiritual grunt work. That's great.
Yeah, thank you.
Okay, thank you, Mike.
Hey, Kevin, I love that spiritual grunt work. That feels like what I do all the time. You know what? Actually, that captures what I feel like settling is for me. Like, it's the spiritual grunt work. But what you were describing as sukha, which that fits really well with the way I feel when I do get settled. And in my body, like you were talking about, when I can really feel at ease in my body. I feel this, like, it really is like a low level sense of pleasure, like you were talking about. It just describes it really well for me. Like Saturday, I did a half day meditation retreat. And after like a couple of iterations, you know, when you really get settled like that and your mind slows down, that is a really, just, it just really described it for me, Tsuko, what you were talking about. So.
Thanks, Mike. And it's something that I'm very aware of, how, what, you know, we talk about calming in meditation as concentration, but that's not really a good description for me of what it feels like. It's much more physical, because concentration seems very mental and like it's all about being focused on one thing. But whereas what's called shamatha, which is the calming, is much more what happens to me when I'm settling in meditation, and it feels much more related to the body. And then the mental experience, if the mind is still fairly busy, it's not as bothersome. And that kind of points to how the problem isn't so much what's going on in the mind, or frankly in the body. The problem is my attitude toward it. If I'm bothered by my thoughts, then they're bothersome. I mean, that's obviously, that's a tautology, or that's been my latest word. You know, that's quite obvious, but how can you be, if you can not be bothered by your thoughts, then they're not bothersome. So it's not the thoughts themselves, it's how we relate to them. And when the body is calm, there isn't the resistance. We don't feel that agitation. So, you know, part of what we're talking about, I guess, is restlessness when we put it in terms of the five hindrances. Restlessness is what's most difficult for people in meditation, because people will often say, I can't sit still, or my mind won't get quiet. But really what they're talking about is like just being relaxed and calm. And of course, we all want that from meditation. That's what we think is supposed to happen, which can be another problem, because we think it's supposed to happen. So, as you said, Mike, as you indicated, there's this component of time that just has to be put in. And very often people get frustrated in the first 10 minutes of meditation and don't feel like, oh, I can't just sit here like this for half an hour because this is terrible. Not realizing that 10 minutes, 15 minutes, 20 minutes, there's a progression. And you might find yourself after 20 minutes feeling completely different from the way you felt at 5 minutes. And if you can be patient and stick with it, then there is this natural calming that is indicated in the sutta. You know, I told you there are 16 steps, and the fourth step and the eighth step are both about calming. The fourth one is calming the body. The eighth one is calming the mind. So that's very much a natural part of this progression. Boy, this is fun. I like talking about meditation like this. Monica.
I have the advantage of having been through a sutta class with you, but I was looking back at my notes. I, too, after we were studying PT and Sukha, went on a day-long retreat, and I was trying not to get excited. I mean, I found myself going, ooh, I think this is Sukha, you know, when we were doing a walking meditation. But you also had a caveat. You said they're not possible until the hindrances fall away. So am I understanding that correctly?
So PT and Sukha are the main elements of the first two jhanas. And the jhanas aren't, the jhanas can only arise when the hindrances are suppressed, we could say, or when they're essentially, when they've fallen away. So, but it's a good question, but just to say that there are levels, right? It is possible to get absorbed in piti and sukha to very profound levels. And what we're talking about this morning is just kind of like touching into them and having a taste of them, rather than having those profound levels where, you know, you're just like totally absorbed in them. So
it's possible, like in a momentary thing, it's still possible.
Right. Yes. Right. Exactly.
I don't feel like I'm anywhere to a point where I always have the hindrances falling away.
No, but right. But you can still get these kind of tastes of piti and sukha in your meditation while there are still some hindrances there. But just as we're talking about restlessness, you know, that's
a hindrance.
That's a hindrance. And when it does have to kind of quiet down before you're going to get much. And again, yeah, it's not like it has to be completely gone. It's just, you know, it's not, you're just not sitting there, you know, antsy kind of thing. Okay. There was something else I wanted to say. I can't think of it. So it's okay. Mickey, hi.
Hi. So it's reminding me a little bit of the big book, that acceptance is the key, because, right. You know, there's that kind of, you know, in any given sit, you know, or in any given retreat, you know, I get different experiences, you know, and sometimes they're quite vivid and the joy is a big one. And then it's kind of like, you know, in a short sit, maybe I just get nothing, you know, and that's okay. Right. You know, it's okay to get whatever you get, whatever I'm experiencing, you know, is what I'm experiencing. And, you know, having a taste of these kinds of things, at first, when I got my first big shot of it, I was like, okay, I want more.
Well, no kidding. You know,
which is the alcoholic, right? but over time, you know, having these experiences, a variety of strong and weak, and in the middle,
right.
of both of these kinds of states, then it's kind of like no big deal.
Right.
Yeah.
So that's great, Mickey, because, like, you know, what I call this process that you're describing, I think you're describing, is exploring the landscape of our mind. And our one of the elements of our meditation practice is to become very familiar with these different states, pleasant, unpleasant, neutral. And as you say, to come into a relationship of acceptance to them. And because with acceptance, there can also be investigation. We can explore them. If we're not accepting them, we're just in a conflict with them and we're not learning anything from them. We're just trying to get rid of them. Very, as you say, very alcoholic, you know, tendency. So when one of the benefits, again, as you're pointing to, of daily practice, is that whatever is up, we just show up for that. And we get familiar with it so that we're not afraid of it when it shows up in our daily life. You know, when we see, oh, there's these ups and downs. And we're not, you know, as addicts, we're trying to, you know, create this steady, it's always great, you know, I'm always happy, I always feel good, you know, and we're, you know, resistant to the ups and, well, particularly the downs. We're all for the ups, you know, and so this kind of just being willing to sit and put in whatever time you can put in each day, you know, to just be with whatever shows up, starts to develop this relationship to this landscape. And we start to see that our mind has all these nooks and crannies and valleys and mountaintops and, you know, rivers and, you know, there are floods and tornadoes, and then there are, you know, peaceful glens and, you know, and it just becomes much less of a problem. Mm-hmm. And we're not having to fix it. And we're developing then equanimity in our lives, where there's much more sukha going on, you know. So this is because sometimes, I think, just as you were kind of talking about, sometimes it can seem like, what's the point of meditating today if I'm not going to get any juice out of it, if I'm not going to get some happy, calm, peaceful feeling out of it? And the benefit of it is that I'm just going to sit and be with whatever shows up. You know, I'm not going to do anything. And just being able to not do anything, you know, is actually a power, right? This is like the higher power of stillness, right? You know, that we cultivate this capacity to just be still with whatever shows up. So that's great. You know, so I was going to say too, the thing I forgot before when I said I forgot, I remembered, which is that like PT and Sukha, these energies can appear in daily life as well. Like when you're really excited and something really great happens and you're feeling really bright and happy, or you're, you know, I kind of said it in the meditation, like taking a walk in the woods and you just feel really peaceful and quiet. And so these are natural states that one of the things we want to do is start to notice them and enjoy them. It's actually the opposite of what we usually say, which is like, oh, let it all go. But it's okay. You know, the cultivation of happiness, the cultivation of joy, of piti and sukha is okay. It's like, oh, you know what? I'm kind of in a mood right now. I think I'll just take a walk and see if I can sort of brighten my mind state a little bit. And you know, what brightens my mind state is this or that. I like to, you know, exercise, or I like to read, or, you know, I like to sit out on my porch, you know, whatever, just something that just, you know, allows you to, in a healthy way, to just shift the mind state intentionally, you know, totally okay. Well, I said we were going to talk about the precepts, and I actually have a little time, so I'll start. But because I do want to spend a little time on the precepts, I'm noticing that Monica has inserted our little information that we usually give. There's information about how to give dana to me, which I am always grateful for. There's also information about this list of people, contact list. So I know that, you know, people sometimes come here like needing help, and you know, I'm here to help, but if you want to just connect with someone else, there's some people here who are very experienced in recovery, and quite a few who are quite experienced in meditation as well, who are, some of whom are making themselves available to you if you are interested in contacting someone. Just we have, yeah, that's the link that says Buddhist Recovery contact list. So if you're interested, click on that list and sign up, or take somebody's email, or one of the ways we can be of service to each other. I was looking at the section on the precepts in A Burning Desire, and it's one of the sections where I'm giving pretty straight Dharma without too many personal anecdotes. But I want to generally talk, just start maybe this conversation, and I'll carry it on in the next few classes, just to talk about the precepts in general. And actually, I should mention that this Friday, because I do this every Friday night as well, this Friday is the Spirit Rock night. So it's a different Zoom link than this one. So you can either go to the Spirit Rock website, which is spiritrock.org, or Monica put the link in there to their calendar. So I'm not sure I'll talk about the precepts this Friday, although maybe. Anyway, the precepts, what they are, they're five, you know, rules or guidelines, trainings. They're sometimes called not to kill, not to steal, not to harm sexually, not to lie or harm verbally, and not to use intoxicants. You know, and obviously the fifth precept is kind of what recovery starts with. And, you know, I would say that the other four are necessary to sustain recovery, you know, and it can be really helpful to explore them, to explore what they mean on multiple levels. But the starting point, you know, goes back. We have the inventory in the 12 steps. We made a searching and fearless moral inventory. So we could say that that's something of a precept inventory or investigation of our morality. You know, and I'm just aware of how foundational following guidelines like this is, not just to recovery, but to Buddhist practice. And it, when I started to practice Buddhist meditation, which was before I got sober, I kind of saw the precepts as this like beginner's thing, that like I wanted the more advanced teaching. Right, like somehow, oh, this is just for the people who need rules. You know, I don't need your stinking rules, kind of thing. You know, I'm going to get enlightened and transcend all that, which is, you know, one of the real mistakes that even some very well-known teachers have made, thinking that somehow just by being really enlightened, that they didn't have to behave, you know, and that somehow, because they had had some enlightenment experience, that then absolved them of responsibility, that their karma didn't apply to them because they were so enlightened. And this is kind of the delusion that some of the really, some real harm has been done over the years. And I was talking about the Shambhala tradition and their founder, and he's sort of the prime example of this kind of behavior. He died of cirrhosis of the liver in his 40s, so it didn't work out so well for him. Bless him. I see that. You know, what I realized in my meditation practice after I got sober, I found my meditation started to work even better, much better than it did before I got sober. And it's because I was living in this different way. And it, you know, it doesn't mean that we're perfect or that we never, you know, make mistakes, but it's that we're you've got this underlying intention to be kind, to not be harmful, to not break kind of rules and laws and, you know, social constructs. You know what? Again, as an addict, I kind of thought like, I'm an outlaw. And like, it's, you know, it's okay. Like, I'm cool because I'm an outlaw, you know, and it doesn't matter if I'm driving drunk or, you know, behaving in really unwise and selfish and even destructive ways. And again, that was kind of just another like lie that I told myself to justify my own self-centered behavior. So it just, it's one of those things where life is so much simpler when you don't feel guilty about things, and when you're not taking things from people that you don't, that don't belong to you, that when you're, you know, when you're willing to be wrong, to admit your mistakes, you know, it's just so interesting to me that I always thought Buddhism, always, when I say that, I mean, when I started on this Buddhist path, and in fact, even when I first got sober, I always thought Buddhism was this sort of more sophisticated kind of spirituality than Buddhism. That Buddhism was this like really, which it is, very sophisticated and brilliant, you know, system. But I think there's this wisdom in the 12 steps that when it's incorporated into your life, just has a really profound effect. And it's very simple in a way. And you know, it doesn't have the kind of intellectual heft of Dharma. You know, it doesn't talk about emptiness or, you know, transcendence in the same way. But when you just kind of do it, it turns out to like really be incredibly impactful. And I think it's easy to get distracted by the language of the steps that are like, oh, it's God, and God's going to remove my defects, and you know, morality, it's like coming down on, it's so like Protestant, and it is very, very like, you know, Puritan kind of it, and Protestant, and all of that. It's easy to get distracted by that and not see that when you can get at the essence of what's happening, this, which is fairly simple, you know, that it's really transformative. So I'm going to try to, you know, I'll put together some thoughts on the particular precepts and the kind of levels at which they can operate. I'll put that together in the next few days and try to offer that in some of the coming classes. And indeed, maybe I will do that on Friday for Spirit Rock, because I don't have anything planned for that night. In any case, I hope that you will, well, from today, I encourage you to, I hope that you guys practice meditation daily. And if you haven't been, I hope you will start to do that beginning today. And just open yourself to these energies of piti and sukha. See when they show up. See when they show up outside of meditation. And just enjoy those. And in the meantime, keep an eye on your precepts. and we'll talk further about them. Oh, and Vicky has put in the great suggestion of 90 meditations in 90 days. So if you haven't started practice, that's a good way to get yourself started. And it can be 5 minutes, 10 minutes, 20 minutes, whatever you can put in each day, just show up on a daily basis. So thank you all for showing up today. And very nice to see everyone. Be well.
Thank you, Kevin.